My name is Evelyn Keltig. I'm with the Family Planning Association of Maine, and I'm going to present on basically what we've been doing in Maine over the last number of years to what we would like to think is sort of as a famous first lady once said, it takes a village to impact teen pregnancy prevention. So I want to acknowledge my co-authors on this, Lynette Johnson, who is our Director of Prevention Programs at the Family Planning Association of Maine. She is responsible for all the evidence-based teen pregnancy prevention programs that we work with schools and youth-serving organizations throughout the state, and Dorianne Mills, who now is with the University of New England, but during this time frame that I'm going to talk about, she was our public health officer and the head of Maine CDC for 15 years under two different administrations, and I don't want to underestimate how important it was to have that stability and that leadership in a very key role for us during some years that were challenging, as you'll see. Do I just push this button? So, unfortunately, I have no disclosures. I'm not supported by anyone. And I just want to show you briefly the state of Maine here, because some of you may not be from New England, and it's a large state. In fact, we can fit the other five states in New England in the whole state of Maine. And in fact, two states, Connecticut and Rhode Island, can fit in this county called up where Presque Isle and Fort Kent is. It's called the county. So it's a very large rural state, challenging. And one of the things I'm not going to talk a lot about the access piece around clinical services. I'm really going to focus on the education and policy piece. But just to let you know that about 10 years ago, I did a zip code analysis, and surprisingly, the vast majority of our clients, 80 to 90%, came within a 15-mile radius of a clinic site. So it prompted me to start looking at, gee, maybe there should be other places we are. And we moved from the traditional freestanding family planning sites to really working more closely with fairly qualified health centers and school-based health centers. So this map represents working with those folks. I didn't put all the names in because it would clutter things up, but just to let you know that this is a robust system where we reach out through other ways as well, not just our freestanding family planning centers. I do have data, because you can't come to an APH meeting without data. And I ask you to be kind to me, because we've all been jazzed up the last few days with listening to p-values and confidence intervals and confounding factors. I have none of this. All I have is a trend. So please be kind to me during questions and answers about, is this statistically significant, Evelyn? Okay. So I want to say that Maine, we are proud to say that we have a ranked sixth lowest in teen pregnancy rate, and you can see over the years the trend has gone down, although it has gone down in the nation, we all know that, but we do enjoy being one of the lowest in the country. During this time frame, it dropped 48% between 88 and 2008, which was the seventh greatest decrease in that time frame. So everything I'm going to tell you, I'd like to think, has some influence in this in terms of the strategies we've used, but again, I can't prove it. One other thing I wanted to share with you around data is this is from the USPRIF Behavior Survey. We're all very familiar with this. This is Maine, the red line. The national is the red line, and Maine is the blue line. And you can see from 1977, thank you, to 2011, we did sort of see a trend where we just became a little bit more below this is a percent of teens ever having sex. So we'd like to think that trend is a good trend. And the one other piece of data I want to show you is we also, during that time frame, saw an increase in condom use in the state of Maine. And that, we think, has a lot to do with comprehensive sexuality education has some influence there. Because it's just so, when you're thinking about these years, remember, from 2001 to 2008 was a very challenging time for us when the absence money, only money, was flowing into the states and that sort of thing. So to do anything around comprehensive sexuality education during this time frame was challenging. So we had six approaches to dealing with how we work around teen sexuality, and one was advocating for policies that promote access to services and education. increasing access, as I mentioned earlier, to school-based health centers and federally qualified health center services, but improving the scope of services at these health centers. When I brought Title X services into these health centers who are agreeing to work with us, tiny, tiny bit of money, I'm telling you, but it opened their eyes to maybe we should have more than just one kind of pill on the shelf. Maybe we should think about the patch and the ring. Oh boy, hey, how about LARCs? We've been really working with them a long time to get their providers trained and confident in doing LARCs and being able to manage the unscheduled bleeding and different things that happens when you start having patients with LARCs. Adapting best practices in clinical care. As we know, this is a time frame where it's changed dramatically in terms of teens being able to walk into a health center, not take off their clothes, not need a pap test, and get their contraceptive method. That is huge, and that's been something we've really been pushing. It's hard for providers to let go of behavior. I'm sure I'm talking to folks that to tell them you don't need to do a pap test or, God forbid, do a pelvic exam on a teenager is like telling them they don't matter anymore. So it's been interesting to work with providers around some of these things. Most importantly, we really have been successful in increasing access to evidence-based comprehensive sexuality education and collaborating with, as I mentioned, Department of Education and Maine CDC, as well as local schools and things like that. And web-based. We've recently launched a new website, which I forgot to put a picture on it, but it's called mainteen.org, and it's very cool, so please check it out. So this is what happened over the years. In 1979, we were fortunate to get the Maine legislature to support a statewide legislation that actually says in law that you're required, if you're going to make sexuality education available in schools, it needs to be comprehensive. That was back in 79. Now, we didn't know what was coming in 2001, but thank goodness this was here, because what it really did is it allowed us to really activate the statewide coalition. We called it Plain Truth for Maine Youth. We worked to promote sexuality education, reject abstinence-only money, because that was in a time where, as you recall, it was coming into the states. There was a lot of money. First, it came to the states through the MCH block grant, and the states were supposed to do something with it. And then it went directly to organizations, if you recall. In 2002, we expanded the law to promote sexuality education, and actually that's when we got the law passed in legislature. Didn't have any money, but at least said in statute that there was an expectation that you provide a comprehensive sexuality education in public schools. We were very fortunate in 2004 and 2005, again, height of money flowing into other organizations to make abstinence-only education available, where our Commissioner of Education wrote letters to superintendents reminding them that their sexuality education had to be comprehensive. So this is just another way of showing you how important it was for us to have relationships with DOE and with Maine CDC to get this kind of support, to get a commissioner to write a letter. 2005, Maine was the third state to reject the federal abstinence-only funding. Our governor finally made the statement that they're not going to take it. And then we were fortunate to get the learning results to include comprehensive sexual education in 2007. And then along with this, as all of you know, there were more and more things coming forward about evidence-based teen pregnancy prevention programs that we had a program at the time where there were family life educators were going in and sort of talking to young people, working with teachers. It really wasn't comprehensive. It really wasn't the programs where you have 8 to 12 sessions, as we all know, where it's evidence-based and there's fidelity and all of those things that you know if you follow things certain ways, you will actually get the outcome you're looking for, whether it's increased condom use or delaying sexual intercourse, those sorts of things. So we really moved to that direction. We were lucky, again, to have our Maine CDC partners embrace this because it was a big change. We were taking money away from programs that had been longstanding grantees of ours, getting money to do family life education, and we were now pulling that money in and saying we're going to reprogram this, we're going to do evidence-based, we're going to do it working closely with schools. They have to cooperate with us, they have to have a team, they have to sign a letter of agreement, and actually they agree to do fidelity logs and do surveys of their students. So that was a big change, and if Maine CDC had not supported us, we would not have been able to make that change. So that was very important. Lastly, We continue to have a comprehensive sexuality education conference even now, even with all what happened in 2008 and the downturn, and schools having much fewer resources to send staff to a meeting. It still is incredibly popular. We have 150 folks from all over the state come to this conference every year, and it's a great opportunity for people to get together and talk about comprehensive sexuality education. So that's all I have to say. Thank you very much. And those are my contacts. Do it in 15. Yeah, good.